Call the meetings of the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members, there's a minor correction that needs to be made in the minutes, so we'll take care of those at our next meeting. And Representative Murphy, welcome to our committee, and whenever you're ready, you can start with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am ready. We would like $15 million in cash for...
Check my wallet to see if small denomination.
For grants for public television equipment. And there's a history of the public television equipment grants since 1985. And so this is nothing new. It's nothing sexy. It's nothing great. It's just very, very important to communication in rural Minnesota and throughout all of our station communication districts. And public television is the backbone of public safety in some areas of our state all the time. And the public TV stations are equipped with long-lasting investments, but they wear out and they get changed because of modern technology. And we have to move into the 21st century since we're already 19 years in. And so my request is for passage of 353 or held over for further consideration or whatever you do in this committee. But there is an amendment that's
so members,
in
I'll
your
move.
Packets too, but I don't know if we can do that at this time.
So members, I'll move the 353 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill, and also I'll move the A1 amendment. And I'm being told that on the as it's printed on the A1 amendment, line 1.10, where it says grand, that should be grant. So we change the D to a T. Has everybody got that?
What line was that?
Line 1.10.
Oh, yes.
It should say grant, not grand. So, members, all in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendments passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With me today is the head of the CEO of my local public television station, WDSE, and I watch it a lot. And Patty is pretty new. It's her first time at the legislature. So I would like to introduce Patty Messer to this committee. And she has some introductory remarks, and cleanup will be Bill Straczynski.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Patty Messer. Good morning, Chairman Nelson and members of the committee. On behalf of Minnesota Public Television Association, or MPTA members, thank you for your consideration and attention this morning, and many thanks to Representative Murphy for her support of this funding request. Although this bill, H353, is about a request to support infrastructure, what I will talk about is what we do as public television. I will share with you what that infrastructure means to the citizens of Minnesota and the various areas that we serve. MPTA is in a unique position. We provide free and diverse content to every citizen of Minnesota and every segment of our diverse society. Our programming is unique in its breadth and scale. We deliver a pipeline of inspiring content across the full range of factual genres, including natural history, science, religion, and public affairs. We strive to give voice to diverse viewpoints while providing viewers the opportunity to take front row seats to world-class drama and arts and cultural performances. Our public service mission is to educate and entertain with the highest quality programming for children through adults of all ages. The MPTA stations connect the world to our communities and connect our communities to the world, and we do that through international, national, regional, and local partners. For example, our strongest partnership is with PBS. WDSC-WRPT, which is the station that I represent, is the 12th most watched station in the nation. That's per capita, but it's still the 12th most watched station in the nation. And Twin Cities Public Television was the most public station, most watched public television station for 4 years running. This speaks to the strength of the connection we have with our communities. It speaks to our community members' desire for our content. As a general manager of the Northeastern Minnesota PBS station, I am passionate and excited about the work we get to do because of the impact we have. Data tells us PBS is the most trusted brand in America. We are the most trusted partners in inspiring and nurturing curiosity and love of learning for children. I get to have conversations with children who talk to me about Daniel Tiger, Curious George, Ready Go Jet, and Wild Kratts. They have very bright eyes, excited eyes, and those little cherubic faces just really get to my heart, I have to say. They tell me how much they love these educational characters, although they don't say educational, and the exploratory adventures that they bring them on each day. They share what they learn through the stories they tell. So public television tells them stories, and in turn, we become part of theirs. As the general manager of WDSC-WRPT, I get to talk with parents who thank us for teaching their children about numbers, letters, spatial concepts, and more. They feel their children exhibit more positive behavior after engaging with PBS Kids compared to other channels such as Disney and Nickelodeon. Data tells us PBS stations reach more moms with young children than any other network. Data also tells us PBS Kids is the largest classroom in Minnesota and the nation, and it doesn't start in the fall and stop when the school year ends. We are there for them year-round. As the general manager of WDSC-WRPT, I get to talk with adults who have engaged with our content, which broadens their view of the world and expands their understanding and perspectives. Another example of a meaningful relationship is with our MPTA group. In the last few years, the MPTA collaborated on a project, Vietnam Remembers. We brought the national documentary produced by Ken Burns to the local level. We brought our communities together locally, regionally, and statewide by telling the stories of Minnesota citizens who served in Vietnam. The impact of this project includes education for all, healing of emotional wounds for those who served and their families, which strengthened our communities in a way that no other medium or commercial station could do. The MPTA group also works together during the legislative session. Through the Minnesota Channel, each MPTA station airs live coverage of the Minnesota House, Senate from 8 a.m. through 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, keeping our citizens and constituents informed of the work you all do. Like WDSC-WRPT's program, Legislative Report, many of the stations have a local program as well. As individuals, we have our own identities. We serve our communities in the individual ways. For example, WDSC-WRPT recently released a 6-part series on the opioid crisis. We know what an impact that it made. We had people contacting us. We have over 600 comments from viewers and people online sharing with us how important that was to debunk myths about who is involved with opioids, identifying partners to which they could go to. And also on a local level, Lakeland Public Television does a nightly newscast as the citizens and the in that area would otherwise not have daily news. And finally, as the general manager of WDSC-WRPT, I get to lay awake at night wondering if our aging infrastructure is going to bring this quality program to our rural areas where we are, in some cases, the only provider of educational programming. I get to work with other MPTA station managers to buy and sell used equipment from each other as new parts are no longer available due to outdated equipment. If parts aren't available, I get to work with my local engineer, who is now, I call him MacGyver. He keeps the equipment and us on the air that keeps our children and adult viewers in the state of Minnesota engaged and informed. In conclusion, we know and understand the power of public television. A strong infrastructure is essential to keep Minnesota citizens knowledgeable about the world, our nation, our state, our government, and our local communities. Again, thank you, Chairman Nelson and committee members, for this opportunity, and I'll turn it over to Bill Straczynski, and he will share the history and details about the bill.
And you can just pull another chair up there, so if you want to remain for questions. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Straczynski with Libby Law Office, and I'm here representing the Friends of Minnesota Public Television. I think in your handouts there was a chart like this. If you take a look at that, I wanted to draw this to your attention because it helps set the stage for what I'm about to say. If you go to the back side of
ours is all on one side. Yeah,
you're a genius, Jim. This chart, you can see back in the 1980s, 84 and 85, in that area, we got quite a bit of money for equipment grants from the state of Minnesota on a routine basis, on an annual basis. That money was important then because we could keep our infrastructure and things moving forward. We could replace things as it occurred. But the money, you can see, has dropped off dramatically in recent years. There were two bubbles, actually. In 2002, there was a $7.8 million bill passed by this legislature. It was vetoed by Jesse Ventura, and it was overridden in the House by 113-20, I think, and 53-5 in the Senate. That was an important bill. That bill was for infrastructure, digital conversion, our television signal from analog to digital. A few years later, this committee appropriated $6.65 million for equipment as well to finish off the conversion and for the equipment acquisition. But that's where we are. That's what happened. That's a little bit of the history, and that's important to know because at the same time, we had a federal program that provided funding for equipment grants. And that federal program was called NTIA, National Telecommunications Information Agency, grants, but that program went away almost 10 years ago, thereby creating another problem for us, so we don't have access to those funds anymore. And now we've got an aging infrastructure. We have a $22 million need right now, an immediate need for our stations for new equipment and infrastructure. And I'm talking items that range from 7 to 40 years worth of useful life. We're talking about equipment that is transmitters, tower enhancements if you need to be a replacement, depending upon what the engineer says, and antennas, those kinds of things. They're beyond the useful life in many cases. Manufacturers no longer support them. So that's important. We have $104 million worth of infrastructure that needs to be maintained and protected. But the important point is, one other bit of information I'll give you, and then I'll wrap it up. Public television in many states is licensed to the state they are in. For example, state of Wisconsin, state of Iowa, state of South Dakota, North Dakota, and Nebraska, I mean. That's who holds the license. Those states own the public television stations. Those state taxpayers shoulder 100% of the costs associated with doing that in those states. In Minnesota, the decision was made in the 60s to go to community-based public television stations. There are six of them in Minnesota. But the state of Minnesota has always been a partner in helping us since the 60s and keeps staying on the air. So it's a really good value for the taxpayers of Minnesota. They're not paying 100%. You are an important, stable base of economic support, so you are a partner. And that's important. So now But this infrastructure handout they gave you shows you $36 million worth of infrastructure grants or equipment grants have been given over the years. But the state of Minnesota is a stakeholder. What I just shared with you, the state of Minnesota, too, is a stakeholder in our infrastructure. You've got a lot of investments as well to protect, and that's what we want to do. And that's the purpose, Mr. Chairman, of this particular bill. So thank you for your time this morning.
And I've got a couple questions here. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the new members on the committee, by passing this bill, we don't get a tote bag or a coffee mug. But my question is related to that. What have the public fundraising and fund drives, can you give us a picture of how those have gone over the years and are presently sitting?
Ms.
Meester.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I can only speak to WDSE, and as Mary said, I've just been there for a year and a half. We're working very hard to ensure that the content that we are sharing with our viewers is more current, actually, than what we've been providing in the past. We've actually seen in the last year and a half at WDSE increased revenue through membership at 20%. So it's significant, and we know that we have about 8,000 members right now. When I started, we had 5,600. So we are working round the clock to find other funding sources that we didn't previously have, including hiring a grant writer, which we didn't have before, including bringing in new underwriting. We didn't have a new underwriter for 10 years. We've had 16 in the last 8 months. So we are working to find those additional monies that we know that are available that we hadn't been using in the past.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to whichever testifier, and this is a lot of money. This is bordering pretty much half of the total grants that you've gotten over the last, 20 years, 25 years, whatever it is, and or more, 30 years. But can you tell me, you are a private company, and can you tell me how many other private radio stations can come to the state and ask for $15 million? And I know your equipment's old, but I can take you to radio stations in my area that struggle to pay their help and stay on the air, and they do it the old-fashioned way, and there's not $15 million for them to buy new equipment. They still have tubes in some of their radios.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, good question. Historically, the state's been a stable partner of ours, but we're public television. We know what our universe is. We have six stations, six public television stations. The one serving your area would be Bemidji Brainerd Station, and maybe out of the Moorhead Fargo area, Crookston, or East Grand Forks there. But we know exactly what our equipment needs are and where we're at and what our defined universe is. Public television equipment is very expensive, more expensive in many cases than certainly radio equipment, number one or two. But so our universe is defined. We know what our equipment needs are, and it's things that are a little bit beyond our control, like antennas that have been there for 40 and 50 years. Those are $750,000 items. I don't think public television is viewed as competing with anybody or whatever. We are nonprofits. We're owned, are licensed by the community. And what have you. So I think that's important. This money doesn't represent the total amount of the needs that we have. We intend to, and we will do, and we have always done that. We'll leverage this money from private sector sources, philanthropic sources, and foundations. That's how we will achieve our money. But we need the states to be into the game so that we know exactly how much additional revenue we have to raise. And I agree with you, it's a horrendously large number. This is the kind of request that's probably only going to come to you every 15 or 20 years, probably 20 years in most cases, for this massive retrofit. Again, the state of Minnesota, we believe, is a stakeholder with us, and we want to continue the fine services we do.
Representative Green.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I ask this of everybody, so I'm not picking on you, but I ran a business for many years, and you know that there's going to be equipment needs in the future. You know that there's going to be costs to keep your station up. In your budget, do you ever plan to stick away a certain percentage to continue with upgrades? Because and you wait 35 years to upgrade, there's something wrong there. Do you do that in your budget? Is there anything put aside for upgrades?
Mr. Chudzinski.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, I'm positive that they do. In fact, I know they do. But the things we're dealing with mostly, and typically your appropriation is funded, is equipment, is computers, smaller types of items and things that are necessary. So those are being funded. Now this infrastructure need, the larger infrastructure need with master control systems and up to antennas or towers or transmitters, is a new development we've been worried about for a number of years. And we've been hoping and waiting and trying to plan for it, but now it's to the point of being a crisis. So we do put some money away, but we can't handle this kind of a bubble. We will raise as much as we can from the private sector. We're confident in that, but dependent upon the state to help us again every 20 years. So it's a good question.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, you're going to hire 1.4 new FTEs or maybe use somebody you have on staff, but you've got $134,000 for wages for this 1.4, and that's like $100,000 more than we make in Manoman County a year. That's a pretty good wage. So on average, the people that are working for your station, is this somebody that is there now? Are you going to hire somebody new, or do you not have anybody on staff that can administer this kind of a grant?
Chairman, Mr. Representative Green, a good question, but I don't think that relates to us. I think that, isn't that the Department of Administration portion of for administering the grants? And that's not our number.
And I think Ms. Roberts can answer that question with on the fiscal. I think we're talking on the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct. The amount that's showing on the fiscal note is for the Department of Administration to be allowed to administer the grants. This bill allows for up to 1.5% of the grant amount to be used for administration. And there is someone here from the department if you have questions about the fiscal note.
Okay. Well,
thank you, Mr. Green, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I just have a comment. I mean, I think it's a lot of money. I think it's an excessive amount of money. But the one thing in the bill, it also says that the commissioner may not require the station to purchase equipment before receiving the grant money. So it looks like you're going to get a ton of cash to spend however you want, which is what we all love. But it's taxpayer money, so I hope it goes to the right place. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, excellent question. I just have to tell you that since the 70s, these grants have gone to the Department of Administration. And the neat thing about it is that we will submit to the Commissioner of Administration a list of the equipment that we have that we know we need to buy, and we will use that grant to get the state money, and then we will report back to the Commissioner of Administration exactly what we bought, where it's at. So, I mean, that's how the process works. So it's very well transparent, and it's easy to audit. We've been audited many times by the internal auditor and by the legislative auditor. So thank you.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak for or against this bill? If not, we'll lay this bill over for Representative Murphy, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you're going to have similar bills before your committee or not. Otherwise, you could send it to capital investment.
Hello? Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a determination for the member. This is a general fund appropriation. Capital investment certainly does sometimes get a general fund target, but I think that's a decision for
Representative Carlson.
If I may, the motion would be to send it to Ways and Means, and then Ways and Means would refer it to capital investment.
If we do it,
so the motion is clear.
At this time, we'll lay it over, and if we if that's the route we need to go, we can do that in a future meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
And with that, members, I will lay this over for possible inclusion. And the next bill we have is Representative Liver. We're going a little bit out of order. Your testifier's not here yet, Dean.
Okay.
I got a note, Representative Carlson. I was given a note that he's stuck in traffic.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I'm here for the morning.
morning.
Yeah. I see you have your copy. This is 1187. And Representative Lippert, if you want to, this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion, so no motion is required, there's no amendment on it, so proceed with your testimony, and your testifier can introduce himself for the tape, and then we
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1187 appropriates $1.07 million in general funds to the Minnesota Public Radio for equipment grants in the fiscal year 2021 biennium. And these grants ensure Minnesota Public Radio can provide essential emergency alert system services. Minnesota Public Radio is a statewide network, is the backbone to Minnesota's emergency alert system. So when emergency alerts are issued, Minnesota Public Radio provides the alerts not only to its listeners, but to all media outlets throughout greater Minnesota. In turn, other media outlets provide their audiences EAS alerts as well. And NPR previously presented a detailed overview of this funding in this committee on January 30th. The summary of that presentation is included in your committee materials as well. Since that time, Governor Waltz released his proposed budget, increasing NPR's equipment grant-based funding for $200,000 for each year in fiscal year 2021. As was presented on January 30th, these grants are used solely for needed equipment repairs and replacements throughout greater Minnesota. So no general fund dollars are spent on metro stations, on NPR employee salaries, or programming. And for each dollar NPR receives from the state, it invests $5 for the repairs and replacements. House File 1187 ensures the public-private partnership and relationship between the state of Minnesota and NPR is ready to alert Minnesotans during all emergencies. With me is John Kavanaugh, to provide limited testimony and to answer any questions from the committee.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape. And
thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm John Kavanaugh with Minnesota Public Radio. First of all, I do want to thank you yet again for opening your offices. We've visited with most members at this time. If we haven't visited with you yet, I believe we're probably on your schedule, just so you know. I also want to thank Representative Lippert, Representative Quam, and Representative Hewitt for being authors of this bill. Earlier this session, we did present a more extensive presentation for you, and so I'm going to keep my testimony short in honor of your time and the schedule that you have today. House File 1187 reflects an increase of $50,000 for NPR's equipment grants over the current biennium funding. During the last three biennia, NPR has received a base allocation for its equipment grants of $620,000 with additional one-time funding. Although NPR had hoped for the additional funding to go on its base funding, NPR recognizes the one-time funding is more a function of balancing the out-year budget tails than NPR's yearly equipment repairs and replacement needs. NPR respectfully requests the committee consider the increase of $200,000 for NPR equipment grants on the base per fiscal year for fiscal years 20 and 21. NPR is proud to be a partner with Minnesota to ensure the safety of its residents through the emergency alert system, and I thank you and will stand for questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Green.
I hate to keep asking this, but I have to know. I your comeback every year for more money for equipment grants, and like so many people that come here, it seems like there's never enough. No matter how much you get, there's never enough in it. And again, somebody who runs a business knows that if you're going to have repairs into the future, you budget for those repairs. Boy, it sure would be nice to be able to go to the bank every year when you need some new equipment and say, can I have this for free? But, you know, this is taxpayer dollars, and so do you budget at all for this? I mean, or how come you're not budgeting enough?
Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, we do actually budget. In fact, we have a 25-year plan for replacement of equipment, so the needs are ongoing. We make sure that we're looking ahead. One of the things that I do want to point out is that for every dollar that Minnesota does put in, we actually go to our members and our underwriters for a tune of $5. Again, we do keep that in mind. We haven't seen the ebb and flow of funding that perhaps others have experienced. We like to keep it, again, flat, and each year try to keep our requests uniform.
Representative Green.
I just have to say this. Is your 25-year plan telling me that you're going to come back every year for the next 25 years for more money?
Mr. Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, it depends on, I suppose, how you define more money. There is actually $50,000 over the current biennium in this bill. The governor's budget actually provides for flat funding for FY 2021. So if we're talking about more funding, I don't think it's that great of a increase over the current biennium, but those needs will always be there, and the emergency alert system does require that we make sure that it's functioning.
Representative Green. Members, any other questions? If not, thank you for your time, and we'll be laying this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Purcell, yep. Representative Purcell. And we're House File 1303. And the reason we're skipping around is the one testifier for Representative Carlson's bill is, as I said earlier, the note I got, he's stuck in traffic. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. We're here to present House File 1303.
And this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Very good, thank you. And I do have a testifier this morning, and we're hearing a lot about public radio, and Ed, this is public broadcasting and public educational radio station, so a little bit different, but I'm confident some of the same questions are going to apply. But I'd like to start out here just asking my testifier to give you some background on this particular initiative.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Nelson and members. For the record, my name is Joel Glazer, and I am the CEO of AMPRS, the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. And because we, too, were in front of you with an informational presentation not that long ago, I, too, will be keeping my comments brief. I apologize. This is not my radio voice. This is the I'm fighting a cold voice, so bear with me. The Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations is not affiliated with Minnesota Public Radio, with Twin Cities Public Television, or Minnesota Public Television Association. It's important to clear that up. We will be presenting a partnership with Twin Cities Public Television a little later in this meeting, so we are joining them to work on one particular project, but we are not affiliated with, nor do we receive funding from any of those entities. AMPRS currently has 18 different community radio stations. They get as far north as Grand Marais and Thief River Falls, and as far south as Winona, Mankato, and Austin. 17 of these stations are eligible for and typically receive state funding. KUMM in Morris by state statute does not qualify for state funding. They are too small. They are required to have at least two FTEs and a $50,000 budget, and they don't meet that. So AMPRS does help those, does help KUMM. However, we don't secure state funding for them. AMPRS primarily serves underserved communities. We define underserved communities as communities of color, Native American, new immigrant, and in some cases students. We do have programming in 12 different languages. Those languages range from Hmong, Somali, Oromo, Ojibwe, Spanish, and much more. We typically have, in a given year, between 1,200 to 1,500 students who work with us. Those range from elementary up to college, as well as non-traditional students. And I'll talk briefly about that in just a moment as well. The stations do rely heavily on volunteers. We have about 250 to 300 volunteers in some cases. KFAI here in the Twin Cities, for example, all 80 of their programs are hosted by volunteers, so we do a lot with a little. The stations are not allowed to run commercials. There are a lot of things that we do to help the community. We provide in-depth reports on emergency situations, weather situations. A commercial station in Greater Minnesota will do a minute or a minute and a half when something is going on, like a forest fire or the 911 system is down. Our stations are going to do an hour, hour and a half. They work very, very closely with the emergency officials to make sure that all of that information is being relayed and in a timely fashion. And while it's in our name, Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, education plays a very big part of what we do. The education ranges from in-studio experiences to in the classroom. They are not a formal part of a college, school, or university curriculum. They are after-school activities, but they are not an actual part of the classroom, part of the regular curriculum. It's also important to note that it is free and open to the public for any community member to come in and learn radio. They can learn how to operate the board. They can learn how to produce a segment. They can learn how to host a show. And there is no charge. People from the community, we get people all the way up into their 70s and 80s who have always had an interest in doing something like that. They come in and have the opportunity to do so. These stations are hyper-local. So much so that in some cases they will be carrying a city council meeting. They may even be calling it Jazz 88 carries school board meetings. Many of the stations carry high school play-by-plays. Each station is managed and supervised by a board of directors or a community advisory committee. And one other great example of the community services we provide is KBSC in St. Cloud is home to the Central Minnesota Audio newspaper that goes out to more than 400 receivers. So that is the newspaper for the blind program. How do we use the funds that you provide us? Again, briefly, and this really echoes what Representative Murphy said when she was first talking, it's nothing that sexy. I wish it was something a little bit more exciting, but it costs a lot of money to run even small community radio stations. So they're paying their electric bills, power rental fees. Some will use them for salaries, but perhaps most importantly, for the majority of the stations, they do use it for matching funds on a federal level, so they are able to get funds from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. As far as the equipment needs go, we are working with very outdated equipment. This is not state-of-the-art equipment that we're working with. We're literally trying, if any of you have ever visited any of our stations, and I would encourage you to do so, we're literally working with duct-taped wires that we are trying to replace and stay on the air. Our newest station in Rochester in this last biennium used the equipment funds to buy a new emergency alert system that will allow their messaging to go out in Spanish as well as English on an automatic basis, an automated basis. They replaced failing audio boards. Brief history on our community service grants. Our grants go back to 1972. We're not going to go back that far today, but I do want to take you back to FY16, and there's a reason for that. In the FY16, FY17 biennium, we did see an increase, and the reason for the increase is we had two new stations, WGZS in Fond du Lac and KRPR in Rochester, were new and became eligible for state funding. So we did see an increase in state funding in FY16 to FY17, but all of the increase was put, as you will see here, into FY16. And so what that meant, as I'm sure you guys are familiar with, when you look at TAILS and going into the 18-19 biennium, it was based on FY17. So the net result was a decrease of $200,000 for that biennium to biennium comparison, and it was really a double whammy for the stations because not only was the, a decrease of $200,000, but now we're talking about spreading that same money over 17 stations as opposed to 15 stations. So our request for the FY 2021 biennium is we are trying to simply get back to where we were in the 16-17 biennium. So we are asking on a community service level for $984,000. That does get distributed equally among all of the eligible stations. It does not come to AMPRS. We do not take an administration fee for that. It goes to the Department of Administration. The Department of Administration administers the grants, and they have grants directly with the stations for both the community service as well as the equipment. In the case of the equipment, very similar story. Saw the increase because of the two new stations, WGZS in Fond du Lac and KRPR in Rochester. But once again, all of the increase was in FY16. So the FY18-19 biennium was based on that FY17. In this case, it resulted in a $50,000 decrease into the 18-19 biennium. So for FY2021, we are asking that we get back to the 16-17 biennium of $284,000. And again, here too, these would be distributed equally among all of the 17 eligible stations. So in summary, we are asking for an appropriation of $984,000 for community service grants. That is an increase of $200,000 from the previous biennium, but would put us flat to the 16-17 biennium. And $284,000 for equipment grants. That is a very small increase of $50,000, but there too would put us flat to the 16-17 biennium. With that, Chair Nelson, members, I'm available should there be any questions.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me, do you or even can you do like fundraisers like NPR does? You know, they'll do their annual or biannual, whatever it is, fundraiser. Do you guys do that for AMPRS?
Mr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, the majority of the stations do. Some of the stations that are in, especially the native communities, are in very, you're in the Menomon County area, so you're aware that White Earth Reservation is struggling financially. So they do try. They do not get much in the way of donor members from the native stations and some of the smaller rural. It really varies tremendously by stations, but yes, they do. Most of them, not all of them do. Those that do not have tried it, and they really did not succeed. So they rely instead in bringing in underwriting messages from corporate donations. But all of them have tried. The majority of do member drives, and the success varies tremendously by station because there are 18 of them.
Yeah. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any kind of an average as to what comes in from private contributions as a in comparison with what your ask is?
Mr. Glazer.
Chair Nelson, Representative Green, I do not have that information on me, but I'd be more than happy to get that from the station and email that to you if that's acceptable.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what you're saying. So this $984,000 is basically $57,000, $58,000 per station for the 17 stations that you serve and the entire communities that you serve. Is that correct?
Mr. Glazer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Claiborne, yes, the money by year is divided equally among all 17 stations. It doesn't matter where they are, what their audience size is, because whether their audience size is huge or it's tiny, it still costs the same to actually run it. So it is distributed equally among each station.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Claiborne. Any other questions? Again, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak for or against these bills? If not, we will lay this one over for possible inclusion. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members.
And last but not least, Representative Carlson. And I understand Mr. Sudinski is going to fill in for the gentleman that's stuck in traffic. So we'll get the.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. I talked to Mr. Kuczynski after Representative the completed her testimony, and so he'd be happy to fill in.
And we'll get our computer expert here.
Yeah, I was just saying.
That's a stretch.
I always laugh.
It would be even a bigger stretch with the fellow that's next to him.
Yeah.
But, Mr. Chairman, we do have a video. Did you want to see the video before we present the bill or after? We're open to whatever you'd like.
Why don't we...
I played college ball.
See how we get it? I guess it's get our computer expert to make sure it gets it up, and then we can get started.
I played college ball. After that,
while he's doing that, Representative
Carlson,
I served on this committee as recently as 3 years ago. So, and some of the same people are here, although this is quite a...
I played college ball and had some knee surgeries done. And I played college ball and emotionally. I played college ball and had some knee surgeries done. And the first time the doctor prescribed to me these opioids. And I'll never forget, I took two of them. I called the doctor immediately and I said, "Doc, you're never going to believe what happened." He said, "What's that?" I said, "I opened up the pill bottle while I was going to the bathroom, and they all spilled down." He says, "David, I'll write you another prescription." And it was that fast that I was on this. The doctor had prescribed me 40 milligrams a day. I was taking 40 to 80 a day. And then it went from 80 to 120. And I said, "Wow, I think I like the way this makes me feel." And I started hanging around with people that can find me more oxys. And as a result, my whole life began to change. Emotionally, physically, spiritually, I was lost. It had robbed the essence of what I had built. The only thing I knew was how to get high. After that, I was hooked on heroin. And that began a run of 3.5 years where I ended up bankrupting a multi-million dollar brokerage firm that I started, Gold and Silver Firm. I got divorced from the woman I loved. And I was sentenced to 60 months in federal prison. When you sit there and you do a lot of introspective work on yourself to realize I had everything I ever wanted in life, and now I don't even have my freedom. I have lost everything. Thank God that I did hit a bottom, because I was so broken that it was only one way up. I was one of the fortunate ones that didn't die. It's been a tough road back. I'm clean 8.5 years, and I'm lucky enough to do some really, really neat things in my life today. I work with the Steve Rumler Hope Network. I'm a interventionist. I'm on the front line fighting this disease. I help people get treatment. I help people find a solution to what they're going through. There is a way out. Grab onto this rope and let me pull you and show you how. But you got to grab the rope. I can't do it myself. I need you to help me a little bit. And we walk through this thing together, arm in arm. And that's how we recover. And some of the people that recover from this disease become the loudest voices. It's crippling neighborhoods like an F5 hurricane is what's happening. It's ravaging lives. And we need to continue this fight. We need to continue it until we do get some real change that's happening in this country. Because losing 70,000 people a year is crazy.
So, Mr. Chair, before we get started with your presentation, I'll move that House File 354 be laid over for possible inclusion, and because there's an amendment here we have to act on. So is the A1 amendment your amendment?
Yes.
I'll move the A1 amendment, members. And you want to just, I think it's self-explanatory. All in favor of the A1 amendment to put the bill in the form the author wants, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Proceed with your testimony. Your
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this bill, as you saw with the video, is all about the opioid crisis and education. And so I'm here today to ask for the committee's support for House File 354, a one-time appropriation of $1.6 million in funding for Beyond Opioids, a statewide opioid education and prevention project. Beyond Opioids is a partnership between Twin Cities Public Television, Ampers, and Minnesota Public Television. The National Safety Council just a few weeks ago determined that Americans are more likely to die of an opioid overdose than a car accident. And by the way, just as a footnote, just the other day on the news, they pointed out that they've got a new one on the market now that's something like 50 times more powerful than what's currently available. So just as a footnote in terms of what a crisis we're in and it continues to plague us. In 2016, the most recent year that statistics are available here in Minnesota, there were 3.5 million prescriptions written for opioids. Our state is facing what is truly an epidemic that is getting worse. There is no question that we need addiction counseling and treatment, but we also need education and prevention. And that's why we need to fund the Beyond Opioids project. Beyond Opioids will leverage the power of media to educate Minnesotans about the opioid crisis, empower people to share their stories, prevent opioid abuse, and connect people to the resources they need for help. And then we have two witnesses with us today, Joel Glazer, that you heard earlier, as well as Mr. Straczynski, that you also heard earlier, but they will be focusing on the educational aspects of this request.
And proceed with your testimony and identify yourself for the tape.
Thank
welcome,
you.
Welcome, Mr. Pinchetter.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bill Straczynski, here today representing the interests of the Friends of Minnesota Public Television. Dee Norton was going to make this presentation. Unfortunately, he's still stuck 30 minutes away, and so I spent an hour and a half to get from Minneapolis to here. But so I'm sorry about that. I'm taking his place. I don't make television. I'm not a producer or director, any of those sorts of things. But I know a fair amount about what they do. I've represented public television for 35 years and here at the Capitol, and I've been involved in many, many projects. And this bill is here because of what we can do in public television to help address this particular issue. It's an enormous issue. There is other legislation working its way through the legislature, and people are looking for other kinds of solutions. But our needs are great, and our capabilities are enormous. So we can do an awful lot in our communities with this particular subject matter. This appropriation will be for Ampers and Twin Cities Public Television and all of the public television stations in Minnesota. That's important because that money will get leveraged. The state share will get leveraged into other a lot more money from private sector as well as resources we will attempt to put in ourselves, certainly with our airways. That's an important factor in all this stuff. But we learned through the Vietnam Project two years ago, that we had that year-long initiative where the state of Minnesota helped us with $650,000, and that money was leveraged to well over $2 million. And it helped commemorate Vietnam-era issues, whether they're protests or people suffer from PTSD, people want to tell their story. We learned about that community model. We created a virtual wall so that people could post their stories and families could talk about what it was like to deal with grandpa and loved ones who lost their lives or came back suffering from issues like PTSD. That was a tremendously successful program culminating last spring with the wall that heals in the Capitol Complex. Very enormous. We had outreach groups, focus groups, in all 87 counties in Minnesota. So we learned the power of public media and what we can bring to the table to do that. And we also learned that over 20% of the teachers in Minnesota are now using our materials in the classroom. And that Vietnam Project culminated in one of those, several different little episodes they can use in the classroom. So that's what we want to bring to you. This is going a different route than Department of Human Services because I know through those other legislation, they're talking about grants and some education stuff, but smaller level for smaller nonprofits. We think globally, we think big because of the power of our reach. We'll reach 15 million people watch our stuff online on web views alone on six stations, 15 million people. And certainly our power of what we bring to the table on audiences to eyeballs to the screen. And we repeat programs many times over. So it's at least a year-long effort, including this wall. And so when you do community outreach and education, That's what we do. We are very, very good at all of that. We want to lend our resources to try and help solve this particular problem. We thank certainly Representative Lynn Carlson for his strong support and authorship of this most important bill. Thank you.
Proceed and say your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members. For the record, my name is still Joel Glazer, and I am still the CEO of the Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, and thank you for having us before you for this bill as well. As you just heard from me, AMPRS is an association of 18 smaller community radio stations that primarily serve underserved communities. The reason I reiterate the underserved communities part is because the underserved communities are being hardest hit by the opioid epidemic. According to the Minnesota Department of Health, African Americans are twice as likely to die of an opioid overdose than whites. AMPRS Station KMOJ here in the Twin Cities, known as the People Stations, primarily serves African American communities. Native Americans are five times more likely than whites to die of an opioid overdose. Four of the AMPRS stations are licensed to Native American tribes in Minnesota. They are the only Native radio stations in Minnesota. But it's much more than just the Native Americans and the African Americans and people living in rural communities who are being impacted by opioids. That's why we approached Twin Cities Public Television and the Minnesota Public Television Association for this project. They deliver the masses, and we deliver those underserved communities. It's truly the perfect partnership to take the lead in educating and preventing opioid addictions. We are trusted leaders with strong ties to these communities, and with this project, we will connect on a personal level to make the most impact. In 2016, it's estimated that 62,000 Americans died of an overdose, and that's specifically of an opioid overdose. That's more than the total number of U.S. troops killed during the 20 years of the Vietnam War. A congressional staffer recently told me that Mahnomen County Sheriff's Office was responding to a non-lethal overdose a day in that county alone. Luckily, most were saved, but still, an overdose a day. Let that sink in for a minute. 365 overdoses a year in just that small county alone. Those are all staggering statistics, but they are just numbers. The opioid crisis is much more than just numbers. It's a crisis in our communities, a crisis involving people, your constituents, and your friends. When I was visiting two of our Native stations, I had one station employee tell me he lost his wife to an opioid overdose. He and his wife were both on opioids for chronic pain. He knew she was addicted, so he slept with the pill bottle in his pocket. One night, she was able to get to the pills without waking him up. She overdosed and died. The next part I found most surprising. Despite losing his wife, to this day he is still addicted. Visiting a different community, I talked with a station employee whose son overdosed not once, but twice. Both times was saved by Narcan. I'm excited to tell you that he's now here at MCTC studying to be an addiction counselor. This project is about people. People sharing their personal stories. Stories of success, like David in the video, and the student who's now studying to be an addiction counselor, and stories of failure and loss, like the station employee who lost his wife. To combat the opioid crisis, we absolutely need more Narcan to reverse overdoses. We need more treatment centers. We are not competing with the treatment centers or Narcan. And in fact, the treatment centers have joined us as partners because we also need more outreach, education, and prevention. And that's what this project will do. As a society, we can't just treat those who are addicted. We have to prevent more from becoming addicted. We need to educate them about warning signs, when to get help, and where to get help. And not just where to get help, but where they can get help in their specific community. The stories that we will produce will capture people's attention, but we will then direct them both geographically and culturally to appropriate centers that can get them help. We'll teach them how to avoid addiction in the first place. Representative Carlson started off our testimony by pointing out that Americans are now more likely to die of an opioid overdose than a car accident. That's incredibly sad for so many reasons. Perhaps the biggest reason, there's only so much you can do to prevent a car accident. But there's a lot that can be done to prevent opioid-related deaths. And there's a lot you as lawmakers can do to help. One of those things is to fund our statewide opioid education and prevention campaign that puts special emphasis on Minnesota's communities hardest hit by the opioid crisis. Please support House File 354, a one-time appropriation of $1.6 million to help combat the opioid epidemic. Mr. Chair, members, I'm available, as I'm sure the rest of the testifiers are, should there be questions.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank PBS for the documentary on the Vietnam War. As you know, I'm a Gold Star family member, and the whole point of this bill I see as being the same in that area of awareness. And I can't tell you after that documentary how many people actually started talking about it, and that was important to my family. I'm going to bring it to another part in my life of working in an emergency room. And in the ER, we see this every day, ongoing, all the time. We see families ripped apart. And this is a pay me now or pay me later, and the 1.6 you're asking for is nothing. Very little money to make awareness, because we need to bring this out. You don't realize the many families that come in that are just torn apart. The people that come in are mostly on Medicaid, so the state's paying for it right now that way. Or the hospitals are absorbing most of this cost because of many of these people just don't have insurance, and so that just goes to the hospitals. So I'm really proud to be a co-sponsor on this bill, and if it had any effect like the Vietnam did on our family, the documentary you did, it's going to be amazing. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this forward. As you mentioned, the crisis is huge, and it's going to take so many different approaches to deal with this, and I think this is a really wise and really thoughtful approach to how you're going to do it, have a part in solving this crisis. Question for you, WDSE, the public station in Duluth, has already done a really good series on the opioid crisis. How does this differ? How do you kind of get to scale in the way that you need? How can you use some of what that great resource that's already invested a lot of resources in public television? And, you know, how can you not duplicate efforts, amplify what's been done, and how do you get to scale to really, with 1.6 million, how do you actually get to scale to reach the communities we need to?
Mr. Sutinski.
Chairman, Representative. Excellent question. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. You understood exactly what we're trying to accomplish here. But what Patty Meister testified here a little earlier today, and it's wonderful what they've done. They're addressing the needs in the community, and that information is being shared with all the other public television stations. So that's an important piece of the work. That may be replicated in other stations. It'll be replicated statewide, but then repeated many times over. That is one aspect of what we're talking about here. The video you saw this morning was prepared for this committee to give you just a little snippet of one of hundreds of things that we will be doing with respect to education, peer-to-peer, classroom materials, educating educators, educating doctors so they can talk about all of this stuff is all part of that. And then having a focus group with law enforcement and everybody else to be talking about this in every community to come up with new ideas. Then we can do documentaries. We can do a variety of things, at least with our power of public media. Public television. So that's just, these are all snippets, and we want to build upon that. I know that WDC told me when they did those little documentaries and snippets up in their station area in Duluth that they got the most calls about a program and how important it was to the community than ever before. That's how powerful that was, that information, getting out and educating people and teaching them. So thank you for the question. But we've the virtual wall, like we did with Vietnam, that people post their stories on that wall to archive it. And then develop training materials off of that, peer-to-peer issues. That's what this is about. It's a gigantic project. And by the way, we have been talking to philanthropic partners. A lot of them want to get involved in this stuff to help participate in the funding of it. I can't name them, but they've already approached us because we've done these things before, and they want to be a player in this solution. So this appropriation, I'm pretty confident saying it will turn into over $3 million worth of effort.
Representative Laser. Or Mr. Glazer. Sorry, sorry for demoting you.
Just got elected. Chair Nelson, Representative Olson, just to briefly expand on what Bill Straczynski was saying. First of all, the WDSE was more documentary style, and while there will be some, the bigger emphasis will be on shorter peer-to-peer storytelling that will generate enough attention to get their attention, and then we will be able to follow up with messaging specifically to get to a specific community. Because if I'm playing this message, which will resonate in White Earth or Fond du Lac, and we're promoting in a partner that's in the Twin Cities, chances are it's not going to get them the help that they need. First of all, there's the geographical barrier, but there's also a cultural barrier, and we realize that, and we work with these specific communities to make sure that we are getting them in, and we're already working with the Steve Rundler Hope Network, Minnesota Recovery Connection, March, and others. So the purpose of the storytelling is to resonate and hit a nerve and get people's attention, also to educate them, warning signs, things like that, but then really drive them to get help if they need help, but also on the front, on the education end as well. So it will be a longer, first of all, it'll be a longer term project. This is not something that is going to be solved overnight. This is going to be a long project with a lot of different people that we'll be sharing along every line of the spectrum, from somebody who has lost somebody to somebody who might be just starting out. All of their stories resonate, and it will be done in such a way, and we've done similar with peer-to-peer is just so, so powerful. We did it with the Take Control, Prevent, and Manage Diabetes. And the reason that we realized this was so successful is rather than what I call a preaching and teaching or a top-down approach of live right and eat healthy, peers sharing their own experiences, that connects. And so people who can share these experiences and tell them what to look for, if what they overlooked, and other things like that. So it is a part of that, but this is much bigger, and it will be on a much more culturally appropriate and geographically appropriate level as well, where that one was really done just for Duluth.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. This is a great project, and that was super helpful just to hear because of I support and thought that project was great and have used that for educational purposes, the WDSE, and shared that with other folks, and it's been incredibly helpful. So I appreciate you bringing this bill forward and the work that you're going to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And $1.6 million is not nothing. What you do with it makes it something. If you get to be on an HHS committee after you get your target and there's some money left over, and you go through and you hear dozens of things that will help people in different areas, and then you vote how to use that remaining dollar amount, you look at the fact that one thing doesn't save, solve, or fix everything. So you have to have an approach. This is a serious topic. There have been a lot of different things put forward. But to help a person that maybe sort of knows but doesn't, or help a friend, acquaintance, family member to help that person makes a big difference. Because until that person realizes they need help, or the family realizes how they can help, there's a big risk of what can happen. Now, appears to be aimed at different groups and communities, because everyone is not the same. As you door knock across your district, at least my district, there are a lot of different communities. And sometimes the verbiage or how you communicate needs to be effective with that group. And I think this is what they're trying to do. And I think it'll make a difference and save lives. The hardest part of being on HHS committee is making those judgment calls. And, you know, this gives us a glimpse on those. So it's a priority call, and I think that this will save lives, and everybody has their own judgment as to, you know, the worth of a program. But the question I do have is, you had mentioned partnering, working with, is Adult Minnesota Adult and Teen Challenge one of the groups that you are working with? Because anyone that's interacted and heard from that group, that they've done wonders in actually helping people over the, you know, addiction.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, that was the question. Oh, sorry. Mr. Glazer. Or Mr.
I can certainly share with you. We're aware of that, and I know people at TPT in the community itself, they have many, many, many strategic partners like that, and people we will be talking to as things evolve. It's most important.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to say that, you know, the a lot of the problems you're talking about, I don't think they mirror the Vietnam maybe as much as you might think. I think they're, I don't say they're more serious, but they are certainly different. I want to give a shout out to the communities in my district, because last year we had a series of picnics that were put together, and where we went and we served food to the community. And local businesses all over the area gave prizes. There was drawings. All of these events were very well attended, and at these events we had people there for counseling, both booths and places they could go for private. And these things appear to work, and they seem to work very well. And they're not state-driven. They're locally driven. And that's what I like to see. It's something that I've been trying to get through in my district for a very long time, that if you wait for this place to act, chances are you're going to wait a very long time, and you never get the results you need, because 5% of your money will go for administrative costs, and things get burned up. I commend your efforts. I hope they do well, but I hope that when you're doing this, you'll look for things that work, so it's not a poke and hope, because the issue is serious. And you talked about this issue in Monoman County, and I can tell you that one small community there, very small community, at one time last year was up to 3 overdoses a day, and now it's a poor community, and we're looking at trying to get money to upgrade our hospital, because we do not have the revenue for that. So when I see $5 million for a trail, or $15 million for public television, and we can't even get $1 million to upgrade a hospital that, if it does close down, people will die, because that little community hospital serves a very big area, and we'll be in some cases 60 miles away from the next hospital. So I hope, as we're using this money, it's not just, hey, we can do something, let's see if it works, but you're out there figuring out what has worked in the past, and working on those things to move forward instead of trying to find a new solution.
Mr. Glazer.
Thank you, Chairman Nelson. Representative Green, very valid points. Part of what we did not mention is we will be working not only with the treatment centers, but a big part of what public media does is to spark conversations. So we are looking to tie into events like that and also create town hall meetings and town hall forums, but also partnering on that local level, because you are exactly right. Each community is different. That's why we are doing this. But also, Representative Green, to your point, the analogy to Vietnam in my testimony was as far as the numbers, but as far as Twin Cities Public Television goes, it was the method in which they approached and the actual elements of the project. And you are right that It is very different. We are not saying that they are the same thing by any stretch of the imagination. We are looking, in the case of Ampers, to a proven model of this peer-to-peer model, and that's when we approached Twin Cities Public Television and Minnesota Public Television Association, because we had found research, and the Centers for Disease Control backs that research, and also the Minnesota Department of Health backs the research, that peer-to-peer storytelling is a very effective, it was a very effective way to address diabetes. But there's actually, and because we did not have Dean today, if the committee would give me just one moment, I will pull up one comment that he was going to be talking about, which is very relevant to the question that Representative Green brought up. The Centers for Disease Control notes that story-driven media is a powerful and effective way to raise awareness, increase knowledge about the dangers of prescription, opioid, and misuse. Importantly, the CDC adds, the use of personal narratives in audio and video appears to be more effective than other channels at motivating people to talk with others. And part of what we're doing is destigmatizing so that people will actually reach out for help, but also educate them about the warning signs. So to your point, yes, on a local level, and yes, this is something that is proven. Where it's not a wing and a prayer, and I hope this works. We know what it takes to connect and to resonate with these people, and that's what we'll be doing.
So Green.
Thank you for that answer. I'm very glad to hear that. That's kind of what I would like to hear. Also, I don't know what your programming is going to include, but I do know we hear a lot about prescription drugs. And if you want to beat up on the pharmaceuticals, go ahead. I mean, they got a lot of money, and they've done things that probably I don't like either. But let's not lose sight of the fact that the vast, vast majority of these drugs are still coming across our southern border, and we're not doing hardly anything in our area anyway to stop that flow. And so, you know, hopefully that'll be a part of it as well.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would just like to say thank you. As a person who works in conflict and advocates for children who are in need of protection, programming like this that's evidence-based and science-backed helps create an opportunity for people to seek help without losing their human dignity. It allows them to understand that this is not shameful, this is just something, a situation that they're in and needs to be solved. And by allowing people the opportunity to hear this in a non-judgmental way, it allows them the opportunity to seek that help. And so for thinking about this program, for looking into the science behind the program, and looking for the ways that humans behave in everyday life, I just want to say thank you for going forward with this.
Representative Carlson, you want to wrap up?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that concludes our presentation, but just a quick comment. I found the engagement of this committee to be a very positive experience from my perspective. I think that any number of you could have probably been here at the front table to share your testimonials and interest in this particular interest. So I want to thank the committee. It was a rather unique hearing from my perspective. And I look forward to future decisions on the request.
And
thank
Mr.
you.
Chair, and Mr. Chair, this is an issue that's near and dear to my senator's heart. So with that, members, we'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion. And if there's nothing further that needs to come before us, we are adjourned.